What's going on, Bulls fan? This is Peter Szczecki, Pro Bull, the class of 2018, and you're tuned in to the It's Brewing podcast. Go Bulls.
You have to understand those who came before you. You can't just play for me.
Payoff pitch. Rutscher pulls it. Deep to right field. And this game is tied.
Every day is to make the university extremely proud, to make our alumni extremely proud of what we're doing in the program. Culture and work ethic and all of those things, those are living, breathing things.
Are you kidding me?
This is ripped, the first Hogan, and there is your game winner. The South Florida Bulls can celebrate. They are headed to the Super Regionals for the first time in school history.
If you don't have the expectation of getting to Omaha and playing well in Omaha, you probably shouldn't be coaching Division I baseball.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of It's Brewing at McEwen, a USF baseball podcast. I'm your host, Mark Giardino, and today I'm joined by one of my co-hosts, John Kaplan. In addition to that, we are also joined by a very special guest, the pitching coach of USF baseball, Daniel Schlereth. Coach Schlereth enters his second year at the helm of the USF pitching staff. Before coming to USF, he was an All-American pitcher at the University of Arizona, a first-round draft pick of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and played 12 seasons of professional baseball, with four of those in the major leagues. After finishing his playing career, he spent a season working in the player development and pro scouting department for the Pittsburgh Pirates, before becoming the pitching coach at Western Michigan, which was his final stop before joining the Bulls last year. Daniel, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing really well. Team practice today, first one. Always welcome for our coaches. Those individuals in September get a little bit long and drawn out, so I'm excited to be in team practice.
Nice. Perfect timing then for this show, you know, just kind of previewing the fall and first day of practice. Love that. Nice. John, I'll let you kick in some of our background stuff here.
Hey, Coach. How's it going, man? Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, yeah, before we jump into some more baseball stuff, we wanted to touch on your background a little bit. First thing is that you're from Anchorage, Alaska. Could you talk a little bit about being from Alaska, growing up there? Do you ever go back there? Still have family there? Because like outdoors is something I've always been very interested in.
Yes. Alaska is very special to me. Love to fish. Not the most conducive environment for a baseball guy. Both my parents were born and raised in my dad's from Anchorage. My mom's from a little ski town called Girdwood. And I was born there. My older sister was born there. And so I was there for probably maybe 3 years. And then dad was in football. So he was with the Washington Redskins. And I feel proud saying that I like that franchise. So we moved to Northern Virginia when I was young. And then found our way to Denver, Colorado, as he was with the Broncos as well. So I kind of moved around a little bit, but mostly, I guess, kind of grew up in the Denver area, and Alaska will always be a special place. Unfortunately, with the season and the timing of the season, and then the crazy recruiting mess in the summer, that's I don't really get back too much, but have family up there. And always welcome a trip up there. It's a great spot.
That's awesome. Yeah, you're joined by a Cowboys fan and a Giants fan right now.
Oh,
so
wow.
we've got pretty much the entire NFC East represented. We won't worry about those Eagles, you know, when they can win more than two Super Bowls, and they can have a voice in this chat.
That's right. I like that. Yeah, the Eagles are tough, man. They were bruisers back in the 90s too, but Redskins, they kind of ran the show, Redskins and the Cowboys in the 90s. That was a pretty great rivalry, and hoping the Commanders, they can kind of step up here a little bit. They've been with the quarterback, they should be in a good spot, but somebody's got to trip up the Eagles, man. They're pretty dominant right now.
Yeah, it's not going to be my Cowboys, coach. We are looking pretty weak. But you know, anything can happen. And yeah, my dad always told me that the Redskins always played the Cowboys the hardest back in the
They
90s.
were
So
tough, man.
that
Those
was one of
were
his biggest rivals for sure.
I got to see him in person with the Aikman crew and Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin, and their offensive line was no joke. And then a couple Hall of Famers on defense. So those games, I can still vividly remember going to RFK Stadium and seeing the Cowboys and the Redskins go toe to toe. Those were some pretty cool days, pretty cool games.
I am envious of that. And before I take up too much longer on that, my first game was a Thanksgiving game at Jerry World against it was still the Redskins. And so pretty cool, man.
Very,
That's pretty awesome.
very cool. Yeah.
Thanks, coach.
So kind of a cool, kind of a unique upbringing. Obviously, being from Alaska, there's not a ton of baseball people up there, not a lot of football people up there either. So, very blessed and very fortunate to grow up in the household that I grew up in, and got some behind the scenes look at kind of being a professional athlete with my
Yeah.
dad, and I think that helped me in my own career. But very, very fortunate,
Absolutely.
very fortunate, and I think that really helped me as a kid and growing up and just kind of understanding the landscape of what it takes to be a professional athlete and what it takes to, I mean, survive in this business. So, and I'm still doing it today. I'm trying to survive in this world of college athletics, this crazy landscape we're in, and keeping our head above water. But I think we're getting our players in here and hopefully get this place going, man. It's going to be I'm really looking forward to this team and this season.
Us as well, and I know we're going to touch on that soon. But Mark, I think you had some more questions about his dad, actually.
Yeah. So I wanted to just, you know, for any of the listeners that aren't aware, you know, Daniel's dad is Mark Schlereth. He was a three-time Super Bowl champ, offensive lineman. I know him best from being a longtime TV personality on ESPN. I mean, Mark Schlereth, I mean, that was like part of my childhood, man. Come home from school and pop on NFL Live after school.
Yes, yes, yes.
So that's really cool, man. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's been a crazy ride. We've been fortunate, man. We've been in the sports world. We don't even know what real work is, really. So this
Right.
is sports has been our livelihood and our work at the same time.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And I was going to touch on, you know, just different memories that you have of, you know, growing up around the locker room, things like that. And sounds like you already, you know, saw a lot of great things. And like you said, it kind of helped you in your path to becoming a pro yourself. But do you have any, what maybe like your favorite memory of being around some of those teams of your dad's, or maybe even the Super Bowl wins or anything like
Oh man, I got a laundry list and probably
that?
more as a kid.
Okay, yeah.
Even more so than my own career. You know, I don't really, I certainly had some really cool experiences as a player, but as a kid, you know, you're like a sponge when you're growing up and
Sure.
vividly recall all three Super Bowls. We won one with the Redskins in 1991 over Buffalo. And then the two Super Bowls in Denver were just incredible. I mean, just to see, it was almost, especially with the dad and the offensive line and knowing the history of the Broncos and John Elway with the four Super Bowl losses he had before my dad signed with Denver, and then to go back to back. I mean, just to see John Elway and those teams, there were so many great players and people on those teams. So those three Super Bowls, probably the two Denver Super Bowl wins were, I think those probably are my favorite. The first one, especially getting Denver, the first Super Bowl in franchise history was so cool to see. I was,
Yeah, that's awesome.
shoot, man, we were on the 30-yard line. I remember we were in San Diego at old Qualcomm Stadium. Jack Murphy for the older people on this, but where the Chargers and the San Diego Padres played. I remember it vividly. And watching John Elway raise his arms after that ball hit the ground, the ball from Brett Favre. When that thing hit the ground and that
Yeah.
time hit zero, man, it was, I
That's
mean,
so cool.
I get goosebumps right now even thinking about it. It was, that was the most special sports memory I think that I've had.
No, I believe it. That's awesome, man. That's awesome. I'll kick it back to John. He wanted to ask you a couple more things real quick.
I remember as a kid, I was probably, I don't, what year was that Green Bay Denver Super Bowl?
That
It had to have
was
been like 98.
97 was that season. It was technically
Okay.
in 98. The Super Bowl was in January at that time. So that
Okay,
was the
yeah, exactly.
97 Broncos team. Yeah.
I remember that vividly. And then I was trying to remember, you said they went back to back. Who'd they get the second Super Bowl in Denver?
The second one, the poor Atlanta Falcons, man, they were walking into an absolute mess. I mean, they were
Okay.
that team, the 98 Denver Broncos team. I will say, not just because I'm a little biased about it, that
Sure.
98 Broncos team, nobody was beating that team.
Wow.
And they were so stacked offensively, defensively, and that was an absolute drubbing in 98. So that one wasn't as exciting because we felt like, even just being around the team on the outside, it just felt like that was going to be an absolute beatdown from the
Right.
beginning, and it ended up happening. And then to see John, to see Elway walk that thing off and ride into the sunset after a back-to-back championship, and him getting to retire on top. I mean, there's nothing better in sports than that.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Coach, we may need to connect on like social media about this because as somebody who is like an avid collector of baseball cards, I would love to see your sports memorabilia room because it's probably unmatched,
It's
to be
pretty good, man.
honest.
I'm not gonna fib with you. It's pretty good. And I don't want to be cocky, but I have some of my own memorabilia from my time with the Tigers. Had some really, really great teams there.
They were so good when you played for them too.
So good. And those are my best memories as a player. And then I have a few random items too. Like, I have a signed baseball from Michael Phelps somehow. One of the coolest things I have, and it wasn't a great moment for me, but it got me into the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown because I was the guy who gave up Jim Thome's 600th home run in Detroit.
Oh,
So
God.
I don't know how I feel about that, but Jim was one of the most gracious people I have ever met.
Oh my gosh.
He gave me a signed bat, telling me thanks for being a part of history. I don't know how I feel about that, but gave me his signed bat with
Oh
600 home
man.
run club. He gave me a
No way.
jersey.
That's wild.
So he was super gracious and not a better guy. If you're going to give one up, I mean, there's not a
Sure.
better guy in baseball to give it up to.
Oh, I loved watching him growing up.
Yeah,
He was so good.
he
And he
was a
always gave back
menace.
to the community. So that makes sense, like, about you talking about him as a person. Because I remember him, he would always win awards about like those off the field awards for just like giving back to his local community, which I always thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, I don't know him incredibly well. Played against him, obviously. But everything I've heard from former teammates of his and guys that I've played with that have shared the clubhouse and the dugout with him, I have not heard one poor thing about him. And the way he hugged me the day after. And he found me, he seeked me out during batting practice the next day and came over and gave me a bear hug. And we got to share that moment together, you know, good or bad. It was really special. And yeah, that's the guy you want to give it up to right there. I mean, there's one of the most stand-up baseball players and people that I've come across.
That is easily one of my favorite, probably my favorite story we've had from any guest on here. That is incredible, dude.
He's awesome, man. Yeah,
How old
and
was he at that
it was
time? Because he had to have been
he
like,
gosh, man, and he hit bombs for like 20 straight
oh, I
years.
know.
Yeah,
That's just crazy. He had to
um,
have been mid-30s at that time.
he was
Or like,
at least mid-30s, if not later 30s.
oh my
But that
gosh.
dude was swatting home runs when he was 40. He was incredible. He was
Yeah.
incredible,
Oh,
man.
man.
He just knew. He was so smart too. Like, some of these guys, until you've shared the field with some of these guys and you've gone toe to toe with some of these Hall of Fame hitters, they don't get credit for the mental game and what pitches they're sitting on and their approach. And you know, even if something as dumb as like, where's the wind carrying in the outfield? This all the little intangibles that people don't think about. He was, I mean, easily one of the smartest, most cerebral hitters that baseball's ever seen. And obviously, Hall of Fame career. Anyone who hits 600 home runs, they have a pretty good clue of what they're doing and how to maximize their skill set.
No kidding.
Absolutely. I wanna come back more to the some of the pro memories, but being like somewhat new to the area, you're kind of getting used to living in Tampa. How have you grown accustomed to living in the area? Like, what are some things that you've enjoyed? You know, are you getting to enjoy any free time? You said you like fishing. Tampa's a one of the best spots to be if you enjoy fishing.
Right.
It may not be as much fly fishing as there is in Alaska, but you can fish some flats, chase some reds. So how have you
Yeah,
enjoyed it
so
so far?
I we're this is Tampa, the Tampa area for us, it's really not a foreign territory for my family because I shoot, man, I've almost played for every organization on the Gulf Coast of Florida. So most of our spring trainings happened in this area, you know,
That
up and
makes
down the
sense.
Tampa area. So,
Great point.
and we were in Lakeland with the Tigers, obviously, that's right down the
Yep.
road from us. And spent four, I think we were four or five spring trainings there and played with, shoot, Baltimore and Sarasota, Pittsburgh and Bradenton, Toronto in Dunedin. I mean, we were in the Red Sox down in Fort Myers. So we know the area very well. We spent a lot of
Okay.
time and almost was like a second home for us. So when Coach called me, let's see, that would have been last year in June or July when we started talking on the phone. It was pretty easy for us, man. Like this is almost a second home for us and we're very comfortable out here. We know the area very well. Kids kind of grew up out here in this area, so it is a little sweaty for us out here. It's very hot during the summer and the later spring, but it's been such an easy transition. Unfortunately, haven't had much time. We're trying to get this place rolling here, so haven't had a ton of downtime with recruiting and obviously the baseball season, the fall schedule is pretty packed, so. Not a ton of time to fish, although I know the fishing out here is elite. There's so many spots to go. Used to bass fish in the Lakeland Winter Haven area with some teammates with the Tigers, so got into some pretty good largemouth in there, but not a ton of salt water yet. Haven't experienced that too much.
Yeah, most of my background in fishing, I learned how to fish like top water for in fresh water, you know, chasing largemouth like you were talking about, getting kicked off of golf courses because that's where you find the 10-pounders anyways. But we I my cousin's a guide out in St. Petersburg, so if you're ever looking to do some salt water, definitely let me know and we can hook you up.
Yeah, we actually now that I'm sorry about that, that's a little kid. One of the let's see, this would have been in this is way back now. Holy cow. It would have been 2011 with the Tigers. Rick Porcello, starting pitcher we had on those teams. We went
Yeah.
down to the I believe we went all the way down to Venice from Lakeland. Stayed up all night and we chased some snook with some shrimp. I mean, holy cow, we slammed them under a bridge somewhere. I think it was somewhere in Venice. I don't even remember. But I mean, how just like when those dock lights are shining and those snook are
Yep.
just feeding around those areas, we smoked them. And
And they'll fight you too.
that was yeah. I think I stepped on some coral too, so that felt good the next day when I had to throw, but that was a really fun memory we had. We did that a couple times, I believe, but didn't get back up into Lakeland until the wee hours of the morning and then had to report at about 7 a.m. to camp. So couldn't do that a ton, but we got into some pretty good snook down there. That was fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, I remember him. He was a good pitcher. He was a good pitcher for you guys. Good
He
starter,
was
I think.
great, man. He was great. That's another guy that's undervalued. When
Long
you look
career.
back, it was pitched for a long time. Actually won a Cy Young with the Red Sox and was such an integral part of what we were
Yeah.
doing with the Tigers. I
Yeah, he's
mean,
a good man.
he was a ground
Pitched for my
ball machine.
Rangers too
He
for a
was
brief
a
stint.
stud, man. He was a stud. He was the high pick out of high school, and I mean, she went straight to the big leagues. He was pitching in one of those like one-off games. I think it was game 163, Twins and Tigers to get into the playoffs. And he actually started that game as a 19-year-old,
Oh my gosh.
and ended up they ended up winning that game and getting to the playoffs. And I mean, anybody who can step into that situation, especially in a raucous Metrodome at the time. You got to be pretty special mentally, not only physically, but mentally. You got to be pretty buttoned up to
Yeah.
do that. And he was mature beyond his years. He was, and still a great friend to this day. And pretty, yeah, special pitcher.
I don't know why I misspoke there. I really thought he had a short stint in Texas, but maybe it's because we faced y'all so many times in the ALDS between like 2008 and 2012. I felt like it was literally perennial there for a while. We had some really good postseason
Oh
matchups.
yeah, Texas was an absolute nightmare to face in those days with geez, Josh Hamilton,
Yeah, Nelson
Elvis.
Cruz.
Oh
Oh man, yeah.
man, there was some guy, Elvis Andrus, Michael
Elvis, for
Young,
sure. Yep.
Ian
Mr. Texas
Kinsler. Ian
Ranger.
Kinsler
Yep.
was a nightmare too. Down at
You
the
speak
bottom of
my
the
language
order,
now.
down at the bottom of the order, they had like it was Mike Napoli hitting eighth. I mean, that guy hit 35 home runs, hitting eighth for that team.
I remember that.
So, complete nightmare, by the way, those guys. And man, that was tough sledding, man. They were nasty. So, I don't like remembering those, but they were certainly a problem.
Yeah, but the y'all got your licks too, and I feel like it was like whoever won that series, because it was never the ALCS. We may have met y'all once in the
Yeah,
ALCS,
once. Yep, once.
but then there was like an ALDS too, and it's like whoever came out on top generally was in the World Series. But yeah, it was
Yeah,
definitely
it
a
was
fun time.
the American League, man, back in those days. I mean, I don't watch a ton of big league baseball anymore, but it was such a murderer's row of team. I mean, the Yankees were firing on all cylinders. Texas was so good. Our teams were so good. Red Sox were good. I mean, it was so difficult to advance anywhere. I mean, even in the division series, that could have been a World Series matchup because of the players on both sides, and the pitching was, I mean, just lights out. So, but that's what postseason baseball is all about, man. It's the most exciting time to watch it, and just an incredible atmosphere. It feels like a football game in a sense, just how loud it is, and doesn't do it justice on TV, man. If you're at the game or you're playing in the game, it's more of like a football type atmosphere. So, obviously very cool to be a part of those.
Did you ever pitch at the ballpark in Arlington?
I did. I did. That was one of the loudest places I've ever been. I
Oh
remember
my
talking,
gosh.
yeah, in one of those games, believe it was the ALCS, that probably was 2011.
Yeah, it sounds right.
Pitching against Texas and having our catcher Alex Avila walk out, and he was talking to me. We were face to face. I could barely hear what
Stud.
he was saying, barely hear anything he was saying. And I was just like, yeah, okay, whatever. I can't hear you, so we'll just freelance this and hope for the best. But just the way that stadium was built and the noise just project all the noise projects on the field. So it was hard to hear. You couldn't hear anything. So you better be good. I mean, executing pitches and getting timely hits. It was just really, really fun, really cool to be a part of.
You talked about Jim Thome knowing ballparks and knowing the winds and everything. One thing I remember distinctly is that wind tunnel to right center in the ballpark in Arlington. If you got it up in that jet stream, it was gone. Josh Hamilton knew that
Oh
very well.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and those, I think, the type of some of those guys were just prolific home run hitters too. And if you just made a mistake by an inch, you're going to pay for it. And obviously when those teams are always going deep into the postseason, you know that you better be good, because if you weren't, if you had an off, I mean, even just pitch by pitch, if you weren't dialed in and executing, you were in trouble, and you were in trouble fast. So, yeah, those are some of the tougher games. I mean, playing in the regular season is a little bit different, but going deep into the playoffs against teams like New York and Texas and Boston, it's just you just everything's magnified at that point. And man, you better execute because you're going to pay for it.
Awesome, awesome stories, man. It's pretty incredible stuff. You see it like these playoff games, but to hear from yourself have been part of some of these. It's that era that you're talking about that you played. It was pretty memorable for me as well because living in Tampa Bay area, the Rays were pretty relevant at that time. They always have been
That's
pretty relevant, but they had some
right.
team. Yeah, they had some teams, and I feel like the Rays always play the Rangers too, and
They're always in it, man. At that time, they were always in it at the end. Like they were, I mean, perennial postseason contenders.
No,
And
it's...
some of those guys, some of the guys that played on those teams were nasty. I mean, like David Price and
Oh,
that crew and that some of the starting pitchers. Oh, James Shields was
oh
there at
my
that
gosh,
time and gigantic freak show human being named Jeff Niemann at that time. And they just played really clean. I respected those guys so much, mostly, the way that Joe Maddon carried himself, and the way he managed and the buy-in that he created. It showed so much on the field. Like they were very, very tight defensively and they just pitched the crap out of the baseball and they got timely hits too. Their lineup wasn't incredibly scary like some of those Texas and Yankee teams, but they got timely hits and that postseason baseball, that's what that's all about. Like the timely hitting, pitching and defense, that wins you championships. And if you're gonna be in the postseason, that stuff carries you. You know, good pitching and defense and then getting that timely hit at the end of the game. That stuff that wins you championships.
No, absolutely. I wanted to also kind of I know we talked a pretty good amount about your days as a pro. I wanted to kind of also talk about your upbringing and how you actually like got into baseball, being somebody from Alaska, and I guess you did move to Washington, D.C. area, I suppose, and then Colorado for high school, I think. So, I mean, your dad's a football player, and I did read a little bit that you were a pretty good football player yourself, and in Colorado. So how did you end up just kind of like going with baseball instead of football, and how seriously did you consider maybe even taking football to another level too when you were younger?
Well, man, I love football. That was my thing. And for me, unfortunately, I'm not the biggest guy. I mean, my mom's 5'2". My dad's a moose. So I kind of got more of my mom's, I guess, size. But I wanted to play college football more than anybody on this planet. And being left-handed and I threw hard and had a good breaking ball and baseball, I kind of knew in the back of my mind that baseball was going to be my thing, but I mean, even to this day, I love football. And when that's your bloodline and you can't, I mean, a lot of kids, they want to be like their dad. And for me, especially, I wasn't going to be an offensive lineman, but I certainly enjoyed the heck out of playing football growing up. And I knew baseball was going to be my path, but there was a little part of me where I'm like, oh my gosh, I would just love to play one game in college as a football player. But all things considered, it worked out okay, and it keeps me loving football because sometimes when you play something for a long time, you tend to fall out. You fall out of love with it a little bit and kind of leave it behind you. But I still have that burning fire when it comes to watching football and just that sense of like, man, this game is always going to be kind of my favorite thing and my favorite hobby. But baseball, that path was a little bit easier for me. I'm not can't complain too much, but always wanted to suit up on a Saturday with somebody and play some football. But ended up working out. We're doing okay. We're doing good.
Definitely, definitely. No, that's interesting. I didn't even think about that. It's like with football, physique and height and weight is such a big factor. It's like where baseball, obviously you need ample size, but if you got the skill, and you're a left-handed pitcher, that was a clear pathway for you. So
Yeah,
that,
baseball, that's what's cool about the game. It's more of a it's an acquired skill set. You don't have to, gosh, guys, I'm sorry. I gotta move my car real quick.
Oh, you're good. We could pause this if you want.
Yeah, can we pause real
Yeah,
quick?
no worries, no worries. We'll pause. Okay. All right, we are back. Coach Slareth's car has been safely moved. So we're gonna resume. So I think we were talking before you headed out for a second. About baseball being a kind of like a skill-based game, and you don't necessarily have to be, very tall or strong or things. But you can, obviously it helps, but it's kind of what we're talking about, I think.
So baseball, I mean, for me growing up, I mean, just living through my dad, football was my first love, and then baseball. I mean, obviously as a kid growing up, it's, everybody has a gift. Everybody has something that they're good at or something they're passionate about, and then you just kind of ride that wave, and then baseball got pretty serious. I mean, I felt like it was something different for me. Probably, maybe like middle school years, I could throw hard on everybody and I could hit the ball. And obviously, Denver, the ball flies, so that's cheating a little bit. But I just felt like that was kind of my gift in a way. And getting into high school, it was a pretty clear path to playing college, and then eventually pursuing that dream of getting drafted and playing in the big leagues, and just kind of going down that road.
No, makes a lot of sense. I mean, you played college baseball at Arizona, had a successful career there, so. It's cool that you did that, right? Because I mean, there's also a lot of guys that go on to big leaguers that got drafted straight out of high school and never even experienced what college ball is like. So, how was that experience for you being able to pitch college baseball for I think it was 2 or 3 years? And how do you think that helps you as a coach? And I mean, obviously your professional experience does too, but talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so man, college, as you guys know, and obviously you guys run this show, and you're a huge part of our program, and so you know that the college game is very special, and it's almost like an itch you can't scratch for those guys that did play high level college baseball. The environments of the stadiums and being around campus and just the livelihood of what goes on in college athletics, it's kind of addicting in a way. And playing pro ball for a while, I mean, that's a little bit of a grind. And for me, I feel like the best friends you'll ever have are those guys that you played with in college. And that never leaves you in a way. And I think most people that played in college know what I'm talking about. And it's just a special camaraderie. And almost like a fraternity. So I had thought about it as a player kind of wrapping up my career. I knew I wanted to stay in the game in some form or facet. I wanted to stay in baseball. And I jumped in. So COVID kind of ended my playing career. I was an old injured left-hander. So that kind of ended my playing day. And jumped in with Pittsburgh, was down in Bradenton working at the complex. And I was there for a year, did pro scouting, and worked on the field a little bit that year just to kind of see. We had my kind of the guy that I reported to. He was just like, "Hey, let's figure out what you want to do, and we can go from there after the season. We'll figure it out." And on the field, so scouting, it's a pretty lonely business, and obviously you make friends on the road and get to meet people, and but there was something about being in uniform on the field competing that's something right when you do it that you just know, like you have those gut feelings in life where you're like, this is probably what I want to do with my life. And spent a year there, and then it got kind of, for me, it was, I didn't get to coach people the way I wanted to. As you guys know, the pro game is very analytic and data driven and very metric heavy. And
Right.
so coming from a player's perspective, yeah, that stuff, there's a place for it and it's great. And kids love to see their metrics
Sure.
and all the cool stuff that that stuff brings to the table. But I just felt like I wanted to be a little more hands-on on the field and in the college game too. I'm competitive. So the pro game, especially at those levels, is not really about winning championships, so to speak. It's
Right.
more developing, and there's no real like drive to just win every game possible like there is
Right.
in college. So that
Right.
the time with the Pirates was great. It was a great experience, but I just knew deep down, being on uniform or being on the field in uniform and competing and just the drive to win games, that's what drove me to college. And I'm certainly glad I chose that path, and very excited about where we're at and being down here with this program. This is a good program, and just very excited about the future, not just here, but just in the college baseball landscape. I think there's more eyes on the game today than there ever has been. Especially, with ESPN Plus, we get to play on
Yeah.
ESPN
I was
Plus,
going to
and
say that. Yep.
yeah. So, and then you got SEC people, they're playing on ESPN, they're
Yeah.
on national television. So the game is, I think it's in a really good spot. There's still some drawbacks to college athletics, but all things considered, never been more eyeballs in college baseball than there are right now. And the people that are around the game, the people that talk about the game, and then television wise, I mean, it's just, I feel like the game is exploding at this level. And then you factor in transfer portal, NIL stuff, and it makes for kind of a Wild West type feel. But shoot, man, it's exciting. It's really exciting.
Yeah, no, I love everything you just said. I think it's really interesting that you're 1 year of coaching in the pros. I'm sure you learned a ton, but it's something I've always thought too, is like, when you look at the minor league levels, I mean, everybody is competitive, obviously. Everybody wants to win games, but the real premium is put upon is a major league club, winning division titles
Exactly.
and things like that, right? So
Exactly.
the priority more in minor leagues is, how are we best supporting that goal?
Sure.
It's nice that, you have so much influence as a college coach, especially as a pitching coach of this team. Whereas I think as a pitching coach in the majors, I don't know how much they focus on development as much as you possibly could here in college, but we'll get into that too. I wanted to ask you kind of like, about your philosophy as a pitching coach and stuff like that. But before we get to that, one thing I wanted to ask you was somebody on our show, I think it was maybe like about a year ago, one of your players, I can't remember which one it was, he said that you really help him and all the other guys a lot with arm care because you went through some different injury things in your career. Can you talk a little bit about like what you actually, do with that and like how that experience shaped you and what you teach the guys about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that could take us 3 hours, so I'll try to shorten it up.
Okay.
So that's one of my main drivers in getting into this side of it, getting into this level of baseball,
Okay.
is I was so injured. I had to figure out a way throughout the course of my whole playing career, I had to figure out ways to throw around arm pain and throw around back pain, and just I gained so much experience and learned so many different techniques just by myself,
Right.
on the fly. Even in games, like throwing in live games where I was like, oh man, that does not feel great. And I have to stay in the game. I got to stay healthy somehow. Or not healthy, but I got to stay,
Functional.
like I got to stay functional in a way. So
Right.
learned a ton of stuff about just how the arm works and different techniques to where I could use after a game, treatment wise, even at my hotel or my apartment as a player, just like I got to find a way to throw a baseball tomorrow.
Wow.
So, figured out just a laundry list, almost a Bible of arm care techniques. And certainly, I was helped out. I had some really cool trainers and really smart medical people along the way, and just kind of grabbed some stuff here and there. And then a lot of the stuff, I mean, probably 60, 70% of it, I came up with on my own, just in terms of trying to survive.
Right.
So it's just, I think a lot of those experiences have really helped me become a well-rounded coach in a way on that side of it. The arm health, that's such an important piece of it that doesn't really get a ton of love, in my opinion. So I make that when I'm talking to recruits and talking to players, prospective players, that's what I come out with right out of the gate. I just
Yeah.
say, hey, man, this thing is so important to me. As a coach, I haven't had a guy get hurt. I haven't had an arm injury, knock on wood, for forever, but have not had any problems with that. And I think that's just dedicated to obviously player buy-in. And then on the flip side of that, it's like I am more, I guess, I'm a little bit OCD about our players' arm health and their arms, because that's our livelihood, man. As a
Yeah.
program, we're going to go as far as these arms can take us.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
being a guy that was injured very frequently, learned a lot of cool things along the way, and taking care of guys' arms. So when I see different things, or the way guys' mechanics work, and their arm stroke and their arm action, their effort level on a day-to-day basis, saving throws when we need to, and then ramping up when we need to properly. You could do a college course on how to take care of pitching arms, and I think people would pay a lot of money for that out there somewhere, because you see the billions of dollars get wasted on major league pitchers every year. So that's one thing that I am completely OCD about. Our players know that. Our players know I have issues with that stuff.
Right.
And so that is like my main pitch to kids, is like, we got the background as a player, played in college, played a very, very great college program in Arizona. And then I throw that thing in, man, that arm health and our arm routine, the arm care that we go through. And it's a lot of work, I will tell you that. It's a lot of work. So credit to our players for buying in. But that is like our number one staple at USF.
I love that. And I'm interested in that kind of stuff. I still, try to play sports myself, and it's there. There's a lot that goes into it. Try to take care of your body to be able to play sports, and especially for these guys that are throwing a baseball, over 90 miles per hour. I mean, the strain
Yeah.
that that puts on the arm, and it's great that they have a resource like yourself to help them with that. But yeah, man, I'm glad to hear that that's a priority, because that's you're right. The team is going to go as far as the pitching will take it. And, you have to stay in ball games, and so the offense can win it for you, But
Yeah.
yeah.
And that was a huge part. I mean, we inherited some of the guys on the team last year, and then we had to bring a couple pieces at the very end because we got kind of a late start down here at the end of the summer. So we really had, and I had to be really good with guys, and especially like when you're talking about Corey Braun,
Yeah, absolutely.
Austin Newton, Nedro, who played a massive part of our team coming from a Division II and just having a great year here in a tough conference. Those guys had to be healthy. So when you don't have a choice but to, I mean, you had to ride Braun. We had to pitch him. And then at a certain point, we had to ride Nedro for a little bit, not in a completely destructive way, but we had to get deep into games on Friday nights to have a chance to win. So I think guys like that, their buy-in to what we were trying to do, and credit to the player, always credit to the players for showing up every day and knowing that it's not going to be the most fun. Pitching is, being good at pitching is very mundane. It's boring certain days, but credit to the guys that showed up every single day, put the work in, completed their arm care stuff, stuck to the throwing programs that we put in front of them, And at the end of the day, I mean, I think we surprised a lot of people last year. We got in front of, we got put on the map, I think, in a way. And then obviously bringing in some players and the guy, the high school kids that we brought in. I think this place is, I mean, it should be, right? We're in Tampa. This should be a place that's reckoned with in the landscape of college baseball.
I actually want to go ahead and take over there because I don't want there to be any confusion. Yeah, the job that you did coming in here, in such a it's such a huge transition year with so many new names. Getting Bernard to graduate early to come play for us and serve as like such a huge arm for us, and he was so young, and that was one of the more impressive stories of last season. And you may not know this, but like I'm dialed into pitching all the time with USF, so I've been a huge fan of yours just because the on the field work it shows. We were top five. I think we finished top five in ERA for the team, and I know that we probably left some numbers to be desired there. But like with all the injuries that we had to deal with Bryce Archie, dealing with football practices and his availability. And I mean, there was just so much shuffling last season that like I honestly was really, really impressed.
Well, thank you, and that's just credit to the players for buying in. I mean, coach, we have a great head coach here, man, and he
Yeah, we
sets
do.
the standard for us. And we're as assistants, we're trying to drive the bus to where we need it to go. And from the pitching side, we had to have those guys stay healthy. Like, and it was, man, it was a stressful year because there was times when I'm like, oh my gosh, like just praying. We keep Braun healthy, praying that Newton comes back to himself, and we had to share Bryce Archie with football, and that was a difficult thing. I mean, Bryce was throwing, that kid got drafted. He threw like one pitch and was dominant. So it almost, I was really happy with what we did last year. Also, I'm glad that year is behind us because, man, that was a stressor. Not much depth to work with at the time, and just had to have those main guys, that main core of pitching that we had. They had to show up and they had to perform in order for us to win games, and they certainly did that. They did a great job, and I'm really looking forward to kind of spreading out some of those bullets, some of those pitches, to where we don't have to ride three or four guys. I mean, it'd be nice if we could have a collective group of eight, that would be really cool. And 8 to 10 would be a great spot for us, guys that we can really lean on and take some of the pressure off of that Friday guy, the Saturday guy, to where we don't have to lean on those guys so much. And they did a great job of, and I know as a player too, man, when you're leaned on for innings or you're leaned on at the end of the game consistently, that can tax you pretty good. And credit to those guys for just keeping the blinders on and going full steam ahead to where they were successful in the game and they took care of their body. And I mean, they carried us in a way because we needed to have those guys, and they did a great job for us.
Yeah, it can tax you physically and mentally. As somebody who played, I played my whole life growing up. As a pitcher, it's so cerebral when you're on the mound. So having to be like a key cog on somebody like Nedro, for example, who comes in and eats innings. We were dependent upon a guy like Nedro last season. It can be taxing on the
Absolutely.
body physically and on the mind mentally for sure. Actually, yeah. You touched on a lot of things that we had in this last section. So, and just for the sake of time, I'm gonna kind of try to blend it up here. But like, Nedro was one that I wanted to talk to you about because he was one of my favorites, one of my guys that I had like a close eye on coming in, to be like a leader for the a bunch of new names on the in the rotation. But how did you navigate getting past that first those first couple starts? It's almost like it was like a mental block for him,
Sure.
and you knew that he was so physically capable. When he came out of the bullpen, it was lights out, and that's what got him those starts. And then the first couple starts, it felt like there was a mental block. What kind of coaching goes into that, and what kind of like just one-on-one development and conversations go into the getting a player past that? Because that's a big jump from D2 to D1, and trying to make the rotation. Could you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for the most part there, Jack was a guy that I think he knew what he was capable of. I don't think he really believed how good he could be, because I think it's a little bit daunting for a guy that's been at a D2 for 4 years, seeing that level of competition and then making it. It's a pretty big jump. So I think he had that in the back of his mind, to where, like, I don't know if I can dominate like I did at Division II level. I think for him, it just took maybe a month, month and a half at the beginning, to where, like, I believe I can do this. I know I can go toe to toe with people. I know my pitches and the way I attack people. I know it's good enough. So he was the guy. I think it was the belief factor over anything. He was the guy that just, it took him a second to really gain some confidence, to where, you know what, I can throw fastballs 88 to 92 miles an hour, and he's got a little cut on his fastball too. All I have to do is locate. All I got to do is change speeds, and I'm gonna be fine. So I think, as with all of us, especially rising up in different levels of the game, you just have to be a little more technically sound with pitch location, I believe. And the better you can get at that, the more confidence you can bring to yourself, more confidence you can bring to your team, and certainly more confidence you can bring to your coaching staff. Like, we can trust this guy. We know what he's going to do. And I think that it just took a little bit for him to really gain that confidence for himself, to where, like, yeah, I'm going to be just fine. If I just locate, change speeds, I'm going to get guys out consistently. And once he started doing that, he was able to throw more appearances. He was able to gather a handful of starts. He ended up being one of the better pitchers in the conference by the end of the year. Second team all conference, actually. And then one of the coolest things for him was he was by far and away the best strike throwing pitcher in the conference. That dude didn't walk anybody. He was one of the top in the country, actually.
Yeah.
I want to say he was top 15 in the nation in lowest walks per nine innings. So when he felt like he could be, there was a safe space for him to throw his pitches. And when he gained confidence, man, it was like, all right, this train is going to roll now. And he, once he got going, I mean, we took the reins off him, and he just went, and he did a really good job for us. He pitched a lot of really quality innings for our team.
Yeah, he was dotting. Honestly, I really enjoyed watching him pitch because, when you don't have that upper mid to upper 90s velo, you have to be on point with location and pitch selection and all of that. And believing in every single pitch that you throw is huge too. So,
Oh, it's
no,
massive.
great. I mean, great job, honestly, obviously, with all the pitchers that that we had last season. But kind of moving forward to this season, we're kind of looking at a little bit more of the same, where we have a lot of new names coming in. And without disclosing everybody's information on the roster, I kind of wanted to get a feel for a few of the players that we had coming in.
Sure.
So the first one that I wanted to talk to you about was Edwin Aloisio coming in from, I believe, Nova Southeastern.
Yes. Yep. He,
Go
go
ahead,
ahead.
sir. Sorry.
Okay. Let me just touch on him real quick. Big physical left-hander. I think this kid is going to be He's going to pitch some really quality innings. He's going to get chances. He's going to get his opportunities. Thus far, I haven't seen him throw a ton, but just from standing in, we've had a handful of bullpens now. He's got great, great fastball movement, which is just a breath of fresh air, man. When a guy can come in here, another D2 guy comes in here, a little bit different than Nedro, a big body lefty, and gonna rely big time. He's firm too. I mean, he's no joke velocity wise either. But anytime you can couple a little bit of velo with some late fastball movement, that's a really good recipe, especially in this game, at this level. So good moving fastball, throws a really good changeup off of that. Has a nice little slider breaking ball that he throws for a strike and can go back foot to right-handers as well. I see him. I don't want to speak too soon, but I see him pitching very valuable innings for us.
Well, that's good to know that we appreciate all the background on that. There's definitely a reason that we were bringing him up though, for sure. Another name that I wanted to touch on with you, this may or may not have anything to do with, the departure of Corey Braun. Let's talk a little bit about Easton Story coming over from Purdue.
He's gonna be fun, man, and you guys are gonna really, really enjoy watching that kid go to work. He's very similar to Corey Braun, so I know that's gonna be music to the ears of Bulls fans in this area. Very similar, really nice riding fastball. He's a left-hander. They used him a little bit differently at Purdue. I don't know if he felt like he was on a good routine there, but we're gonna have him on a good routine. I don't want to disclose too much. I don't want to get in trouble on here, but we're gonna be happy with what that kid does. Left-hander, 90. I mean, jeez, this guy, it's almost scaring me how hard he's throwing right now in the fall. But I mean, he's gonna be low to mid-90s with a good riding fastball. He's got a two depth level changing breaking ball and a really nice changeup. He's got a good three pitch mix. Without disclosing too much, you guys are going to see him pitch a lot.
Love that. Love that.
All right. That's incredible. I love hearing that about both of them because they're coming over with really good, experience already. I didn't see if Easton is Easton playing summer ball anywhere?
No, he did. I don't think he played this last year. I think he threw about to the point innings wise where you don't really need to go play summer ball. And I know he started for them. I think he pitched in midweeks. I don't know the reason behind it, but don't want to touch that. So I believe he just worked out a little bit when we were recruiting him, and when he got in the portal, I think he was just going through some workouts and maybe I think he had a few weeks of downtime to where he could let his body rest. And he showed up here. I mean, his first bullpen, I'm like, this guy's ready to pitch in games right now, which is the scary part. Like, this guy's dialed in September. So there's not a lot of changes that need to be made with him. He's just kind of a business. Business as usual every day. Doesn't say a lot. I mean, it's very similar to Corey Braun. He's very businesslike, and I know in the same fashion Braun was. The kid wants to play pro ball. He's good enough to play pro ball. He's left-handed with low to mid-90s with two really good secondary off-speed pitches. So I envision him being a pretty good part of this team for this year.
He's what, 5'11", right, Eason?
I mean,
So if he's throwing 92 to 94, what, I mean, is his spin rate just ridiculous?
yeah, it is. It's pretty ridiculous, man. The crazy part about him is he slide steps 94. Like he lifts his leg and he's 94, and then he doesn't lift his leg and he's 94. He's an interesting, unique skill set, to where, and it he. He throws his bullpens a little bit differently. He starts off I like to typically have most guys start out of the stretch, and he'll start off his bullpens throwing slide steps, and I've never seen that before. I've never seen a guy do that, and I'm not gonna touch it. I mean, I'm like, hey, you know what you're doing, so I'm not gonna. We're not gonna approach that, and just do your thing. And it's working so far. He's been painting up the bullpen pretty good this whole fall so far, and he'll get. I believe he's throwing on Friday in team practice, so he'll get to see some hitters and live ABs. And I think everybody's pretty excited about that.
Oh yeah, that'll be interesting for sure. And then one other player I wanted to touch on. We were talking about how he didn't play summer ball, but this next player has a pretty impressive summer ball. He's in the Cape right now. I wanted to talk to you about Caden Smith.
Oh yeah.
What can you tell us about him? Because I mean, all of his stats are from being a freshman, you know. Anything can happen, and he's getting some starts in the Cape. So it's like, what, without telling us too much, what do you envision for him?
I a lot. I can tell you that a lot. Not to put anything on his shoulders right now. He's probably one of the more electric repertoires that I've seen in college. Even back in my college days, I mean, this stuff is going to play anywhere. Very fortunate to grab him in the portal. He's from Ocala, so he's kind of a local kid. I'm glad he chose us and he didn't stay closer to home in the Gainesville area because this kid is electric. And I hope he doesn't listen to this podcast, but he's got electric stuff, and I'll keep it there. He's got a good slider. Breaking ball is a real wipeout breaking ball. So very excited about him. Don't want to jinx anything on here, but that's going to be another very key piece for us.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I see, you know, some of the guys that we recruited are having success in the Cape Cod League over the summer, that's really,
It's good stuff if he's up there shoving. Yeah.
you could say that about him. You could say that about Edwin Alessia. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, we
Now,
got, and I'll mention another kid
yeah.
while I'm here. Kid coming from Georgia.
That's who I was going to bring his name up. So you beat me to
Yep.
it.
So Sutton is his last name is Sutton.
Yep.
He's a big strapping kid. It looks like a pro right now,
I believe it.
physically, and coming off of Tommy John, he's. I think we're about at the 15, 16 month ish, I believe. So he'll be ready to go in the spring. And he's getting live ABs going too. I believe he's throwing tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to that. And just a couple little cleanup things with him. Coming off of surgery, obviously elbow wise, it's gaining feel for the breaking ball. And I think we accomplished some really good stuff in his last bullpen. Just with some different little cues on his slider and for that pitch to feel more comfortable. That's typically the changeup will come before the breaking ball when you're coming off of Tommy John surgery, and he's been working his tail off trying to find kind of repeating what he did before surgery. So that's another kid that we're excited to have and certainly glad he picked us coming from a massive program up there in Georgia. So he's seen kind of what it takes. He's been around some good teams up there, and I think he knows what it takes. You know, he was obviously good enough to go there, and they were excited to have him as a freshman. And then he tore his elbow and
Yeah.
end up entering the portal. And we're very fortunate to have a guy like that.
Yeah, that's I was gonna bring him up because a few things. The pedigree of being recruited to Georgia out of high school, but also I looked at his 2024 summer ball stats before he got hurt. He threw 16 innings with a 1.69 ERA and a 0.563 WHIP. So
Yeah, that sounds about right, man. And when you see him throw, you're not you see how he puts those numbers up
Yeah, I believe
because
it.
He's another guy that just wise beyond his years. And I think he's 19 years old. Like it, some, I was not even close to where these guys were mentally when I was growing up, but very, very professional work ethic, already kind of stepping into a leadership role, which is very welcomed as a coach. And when you can kind of not really pass the baton completely to a player, but you kind of have a feeling of, okay, I can envision this kid being the leader of the staff for 2 more years or 3, whatever it is. He'll get drafted, I imagine, before that.
Right, but, right.
Just a guy that's very, very professional on the field and off the field. And I think he's a natural born leader. I mean, some guys just have that it factor, and he certainly has had that. I think he's had that influence on our guys already, being only a month and some change into this thing. So that was a great, great pickup, a great addition for us. I know Coach Hannes is very excited about those guys and seeing what they can do, and just adding more depth. You know, we got a late start last
options,
year, and we had to, like I was saying, we had to rely on a few guys last year. And that was, I mean, that's tough sledding, and that, it can be stressful when you don't have the depth that you want. And I think with the guys that are just mentioned, those guys are going to be just massive pieces for us in the season, and really good building blocks to start off, you know, kind of our tenure at USF. Like, it's just the type of guys that you want to build it with. And, certainly those guys are going to be pieces for us.
Yeah, no, I definitely could see it. I have one interesting name here. This one kind of just stood out for a few different reasons. First and foremost, he's a lefty, which is going to be a welcome sight given that, you know, last year we didn't have too many lefty options. But Nakni Ana from Northern Oklahoma Tonkawa, 5'9", 175-pound left-handed pitcher who had 81 1/3 innings over there in JUCO and had a pretty good strikeout rate. So he must smaller frame, but he must have a good ability to be deceptive. Can you talk a little bit about him?
He is, yeah. And there's where, you know, the frame sometimes doesn't matter. You know, some guys are just gifted with different abilities, and I think what we've seen out of him is he has a really good ability to spin the ball. Through today in team practice and some ABs, and was spinning the crap out of it. So for him, I think it's going to be more consistency. The walks were a little bit high in junior college.
Okay.
So for me as a pitching coach, it's just, those are things that we can't necessarily have. Cause those things in college, I mean, even in the big leagues, they, those free ones get you. You know, the metal bats don't help down here, and base runners in college are running pretty often. So those are things that for him, we're going to have to limit. We're going to have to find a way to get him more competitive in the zone. Certainly he can do it. Certainly he's got the repertoire to do it, but just more consistency delivery wise. And then that'll show up command wise, you know, just those certain things those kind of go hand in hand. You know, if we can clean up the delivery a little bit, maybe simplify it for him, not just physically, but mentally, kind of bottle up his pitches and keep his delivery very simple and simplify the game for him. That's typically when you see guys take off, you know, when they can hone in their delivery, and that's what we work for every day, man. We're working to repeat that delivery and repeat our pitches. And once you do that, you end up being pretty successful. So he's right now it's a work in progress, as it is for pretty much everybody here, including myself, you know, just learning these guys.
Right.
But yeah, interesting lefty. And then obviously Easton being left-handed really helps us out.
Yeah.
Envision him pitching a lot of innings, and certainly help. There's a lot of good lefty hitters in this league, man. There's a lot of good lefties across college baseball, and most of those guys are power guys. So anytime you can match up is, that's what we're looking for. And we didn't do a great job of that last year. And, you know, those lefties are tough to find, man. They all those good ones they end up at Florida State, and we got to, you know, we're trying to keep, keep our head above water and get some. We don't need, we don't need the guys that are going to blow the world away with stuff. But the things that we ask of our guys here is just being competitively tough every day when you come into work, when you come to the field, and just a mindset of we're going to work on these things that are going to help us be successful on the field. And so anytime you can find, especially left-handers that can do that, I think they can really help out your team.
Absolutely. I have one more name I wanted to ask, and then before I get to that last name though, did I see Victor Cartagena working on his pitching windup in some pictures? Because I'm confused by that. What's going on there?
Yeah, that we don't know what's going on with that. We do know one thing. Victor has an absolute hose. So coach brought it up the other day, and I didn't know if he was kidding with me or if he was serious, but he was serious. So we took him down to the pen. He's thrown a couple bullpens. I don't know if we're going to get him live anytime soon. Obviously, there's a buildup process there with pitching because you can injure yourself pretty
Sure,
quickly if you're not used to it. So I don't know. I don't know what's happening there. We'll have to see. We'll let the fall play out and see exactly what's going on. Victor's not scared, man. I'll tell you that right now. That kid comes every day ready to go. So I know for him, he's a guy that he loves the he's really fun to be around, by the way, too. He's just excited to be a baseball player, and he'll do whatever it takes to get on the field. And it's hard. Like last year, he didn't get hardly any playing time. So I think we're just finding ways to get him on the field because he's such a he just rubs off on everybody so well. And I think he's just going to do whatever it takes to show up in some way on the field to help his team out.
Interesting. In a similar vein, do you think that either of the probably the two highest rated high school recruits that we brought in, I think they're both primarily position players, but is there any chance that either Brock Silvers or Gabe Grillo pitches? I think one of them had a little bit of a pitching background. I could be wrong though.
I think Growlout is the, I think he throws 94 off the mound. I don't know how much he wants to do it.
Oh, okay.
That remains to be seen. He hasn't been involved with any of the pitching so far. The kid can really hit. I know that. He hit a bomb today, on a tough pitch, and he's a kid. I mean, he's 18 years old. So I don't know if we're gonna want to work him into that. I don't know if he. We'll have to see, but still very early in the process for him. But I think draft wise he was a position player prospect, so I
Okay.
believe he'll probably stay on that. If I were to guess right now,
Gotcha.
might stay in that phase of it. But the kid has incredible arm strength, and he's gonna be hosing people from the outfield.
Yeah, that's very
I
valuable as
do
well.
know
And my last guy, who's a newcomer, who's a full-time pitcher, he arguably might have some of the best incoming statistics from any of the 2 year or 4 year school guys. That'd be Jonah Sarabia from Mineral Area Community College. He had a 2.91 ERA over there, 68 innings, 1.3 WHIP. So he's pretty solid.
Yeah, he is. It's a guy that we got to see. I mean, bullpens, that's kind of in itself. It's hard to judge what guys can do in the pen and in that setting. And I think, coach likes to put runners on base when we get into inter squads and scrimmages and those type of things, just to ratchet up the pressure a little bit to see what guys can really do. Jonah has not thrown in live ABs. I believe he'll be on Friday this week, so we'll get to see a little bit of him live. Bullpens have been good so far. I mean, pretty much everybody's been sharp so far. So that's been really fun to watch for me personally, is guys came in here ready to go. I mean, they know the standard of this place, and there's going to be a high bar here. So they came in ready to go, and everyone's been pretty consistent. For the most part so far. So I don't have many complaints coming out of that area. Obviously when you throw guys into games, guys that have never played at this level, you'll probably get some different results here and there. But that's what the fall is for. It's It's seeing how guys react to certain situations. It's kind of testing them mentally, seeing if they can handle that. So we haven't seen much there yet. Day one was today, like I mentioned. So we'll get to see these guys. We'll get to see them compete for the next month and a half, and I'm
Sure.
sure we'll have a really good idea going into the wintertime of who's going to be a contributor for us.
Absolutely. I'll kick it to John. John, do you have maybe one more name you wanted to bring up before we kind of wrap this up? If not, I do have one more name, but it's up to you.
Why don't you go ahead and bring up the name, and I just have one question to wrap up.
All right, sounds good. This is about a returning player, and we've already talked a little bit about him, but Nolan Bernard was really impressive last year as an early high school graduate. He ended his senior year of high school early and then ended up playing for the Bulls as a freshman this past spring. We see a lot of potential in him. Like he looks like somebody who, from like a physical frame and calmness standpoint on the mound, that you want, anchoring part of your weekend rotation one day if he could stretch out to starter innings. And I think he did some of that with his summer ball team. Can you talk a little bit about, like, is there already kind of like a long-term vision there with him to become a starter, or is it kind of just to be determined this fall and in the spring?
The way we set up the fall, and this year we're doing it a little bit differently. And Coach Hannes brought this up to me when we got back into town here in the fall, was we're going to probably stretch most guys into that 80, 90, 100 pitch count range going into the spring. Meaning we're going to give every single guy an opportunity to win a starting job.
I love that.
Obviously, there's going to be guys that kind of cap at 40 or 50. Those guys that'll probably end up being bullpen arms, and that shoot, that's important too. You know,
It
you got to have
is.
back end guys that can shut games down. But our plan, and Nolan is in the mix of, we're going to build him up, and obviously everyone's going to get an opportunity. What he did last year was incredible. I can't imagine doing that as a player and jumping in and fitting in to a college clubhouse
Incredible,
quickly.
man.
He joined us in the middle of the off season. So it was a crash course for him, certainly, but a very welcome addition. Another guy that's very mature. Obviously, you have to be mature to do something like that.
For sure.
And I thought he did a good job for us last year. I thought he held his own very well. And the only way to do that is to be, again, I keep mentioning the professional work ethic that guys have.
Right.
And when you're 17 and coming into this crazy environment of college baseball, you have to be different mentally. And I think, you know, even in his first game, I thought he was okay, you know, and for being a should have been a high school senior pitching against a really, really good Big Ten team in Iowa. I mean, I
Yeah.
thought that was incredible. So he's going to be a guy that we're going to build up. Obviously, there's work to be done for most of our guys, but those opportunities will lie in how well they can recover, how well they can hold their pitch velocities, you know, not just your fastball, but your breaking ball and your changeup. So those pitch counts vary. They determine, you know, guys that can last deep into a game. And I think it's just kind of when you do something like that, and that's a different approach to take, is like you're going to figure out who can start, who can handle that, who can last for going into the seventh, eighth inning. I mean, I think we want our starters to go seven, eight innings, you know. Not everybody is built for that, but we're going to give these guys opportunities to go out there and take a job. And I think that's one of the cooler things that that coach has brought up as on the pitching side, is like, we're going to give these dudes opportunities to go out and earn it. And nobody's locked into anything. So obviously there's some excitement about some of the guys we brought in and some of the freshmen we got coming in here. They're going to have to go earn their opportunity. Doesn't matter if they're 17 years old as a high school senior coming in at the break. It doesn't matter if you're a 22-year-old guy that's, you know, a grown man. Doesn't matter if you're coming from TCU. Doesn't matter if you're coming from Georgia. Everybody's going to get an opportunity. And That's how we're gonna operate this whole thing is, go ahead, man. You want to go get a starting role? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go earn it. So that's the approach we're taking. And Nolan has grown tremendously in the summer and has been he's cleaned up some things delivery wise, and I think he has a very good understanding of what it takes, especially with like the Nedros of the world last year and Braun. He saw really great college pitchers up close, and I think he's really benefited from that. He knows what to do. He's very dialed into the routine that we have here that we've established as a pitching staff, and it's up to those guys to go earn a job.
Love that. John, I'll let you close out here or ask your question, and then I'll just kind of wrap it up with a quick
Awesome.
loop.
So you answered a lot of it just through what you just said there about culture. It seems like it's kind of like an iron sharpens iron kind of deal, and everyone kind of nobody's job is secure in the sense that you're always promoting competition within. And I think that that's hearing that we're trying to stretch out multiple arms to 80 or 90, that honestly is music to my ears. I think that's a great philosophy, and I'm really eager to see how it pans out. Just gathering some, from talking to you over the last hour or so, I've gotten to know you pretty well, and I feel like you're orderly, but you know how to deal with chaos, so it's like it's got to be, we call it organized chaos in the emergency department.
Absolutely. That's what it is.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like last season with all like the adjustments you had to make mid-season with names that were available and not available either due to injury or other like off-field obligations, you got to be able to deal with that organized chaos. So, but in the sense of orderly, I feel like you touched on it earlier, having like a group of eight guys that you can really lean on. How close are you in year two to having with that a group of guys that you feel is your identity? You feel as though you have put your touch onto this staff, and it's like it's 100% where it needs to be. Like, where do you feel that our staff is at?
I feel really that remains to be seen, but I've been impressed with just the working atmosphere that we've created. And you got to remember at the end of the day, you're working with 18 to 23 year old kids.
Right.
And attention spans are pretty quick today. So, it has been I think the first couple weeks are a little more difficult when you're trying to get guys. I mean, guys come in, they're excited, they're kind of jovial and just not, I'm not going to say immature, but just kind of punch drunk in a way. So the first couple weeks, that's when you really get to know guys. I guess how their personalities work. And then that's the time of the year where you try to establish. I think culture is a word that gets overused, but you try to establish, like, hey, here's what we do. We have some returning guys that can kind of lead the way on that. And you establish what your workplace looks like. And I'm a guy, I love to get to know these kids, and obviously it's fun to joke around with them occasionally. And it almost like let them know you're kind of a big brother slash not an authoritative figure, but a big brother slash veteran player on their team, to where if and I believe that personally, just because I want them to be comfortable with me enough to, if there's something going on with their arm or they're not scared to tell me, I want to establish comfortability in that fashion. But at the same time, when we got to crack the whip, they get in order pretty quickly. So those first couple weeks, that's kind of where we set our workplace. if you will. And that's where we create the very beginning of the buy-in that goes on. Especially, we're still a new staff here, and we're trying to establish what we're about as a staff and where we want to direct this program, which I feel is we're trending in the right direction, which we're excited about. But those first weeks are crucial in my opinion. And you get to see, we push these guys. We push them pretty hard. So I just feel like when they can learn us, as a coach, and at the same time they can learn us as a person, the quicker you can establish those things, the better off you're going to be in the long run. They know when to speak, they know when to joke around, they know when things are getting serious. So those are all things encompassing of being a college coach with this age group. Is you got to teach these guys, and someone told me a couple years ago, don't assume they know what you're talking about. So establishing that player coach trust and that relationship early in the fall, I think, is incredibly crucial. And getting to know our players kind of on a fast track, a roller coaster ride of getting to know these guys quickly, because man, when the winter comes here, we don't get to be around these guys. See, like the winter break shows up, and then before you know it, the year turns over and you're playing a Big Ten team. Like it happens so quick. So we certainly enjoy the fall, and our falls are tough and they're demanding. And that's kind of how our workplace and our culture is established. It's like, this is what we're doing. We're not going to do a bunch of talking. As coaches, we're not going to hold your hand. I mean, this is what it is. And I believe Nick Saban said, I watched on a video, I think a couple weeks ago, it takes what it takes, and like, take your feelings out of it. Like it, if we want to be a champion here and we want to be great here, it takes what it takes, man. And we don't really care what you have to say about it or your feelings. And I mean, that's what this business is. So I do subscribe to the trust between a player and coach. I know how it is to be a player. And when your players trust you, then they'll go to war for you. And that's, I try to relay that, in my own way with players every day is, give them something every day to where we can kind of feed them and get them more in line with what we want to do and what we want to establish here at USF.
Well, Coach, thank you first off for sifting through my horrible articulation of that question.
No,
You hit
I
the nail on
honestly
the
don't
head
even
with your
know.
answer.
I don't even know if I made sense at all, but it sounded good at the time.
No, it's perfect. And also, I just want to say thank you for all the time that you've spent with us today. And we really look forward to seeing the on-field product. And we will be in touch with you throughout the season. So thank you,
Yeah,
Coach.
that sounds good, man. I think you guys are going to be excited what we're going to do here. Year two, it should be a fun year. And yeah, let me know anytime. I'll be available at nights for the most part. So anytime you guys want to jump on, that'd be awesome.
Perfect.
Absolutely. And we look forward to that. And yeah, I'll either text you or Coach Hannah's to maybe get a few practice dates. Maybe I might be able to come out later in the month. And John's up in Ohio, so I'll have to record some practice for him or something. But
Perfect. Perfect.
yes, yeah. But no, we really appreciate you joining us today and learned a lot and enjoyed it and really look forward to chatting with you again and following the progress this fall.
Awesome, man. Well, take care. I appreciate the time, and we'll be chatting with you guys soon. Go Bulls.
Sounds good. Go Bulls,
Go
man. Take
Bulls.
care.